on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, August 15th, 2025. The 15th or is it the 16th? Who knows? 15th it is, which means we are officially halfway through the month of August. And unfortunately, hate to be the bearer of bad news here, summer is almost over. So as your kids go back to school, as things get to be in the full swing of life, it becomes more and more difficult to pay attention to all that is happening around us. And so we here at InvestTalk see our mission as helping you sift through the noise, find out what matters, with the goal being making you a better and more informed investor. Now, we do that by bringing some educational items and some actionable material to the table each and every day, 5 days a week. But the most important part of this show, because after all, it is about you, is answering your finance and investment questions. To that end, before we talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Rico from New York. I'm calling just to hear your opinions on the company Fiserv, ticker symbol FI. It's at a very low valuation right now. I was wondering what the long-term, how the business model will serve long-term. Thank you.
Fiserv, ticker FI, is a fintech payment solutions processing e-commerce company. Big mouthful there. Their primary business is working with merchants for digital commerce, mobile payments, and fraud protection. Over the past one month, the stock is about flat, down 14% over the past 3 months, down 33.45% over the past year. Apologies, over the past 1 month, down 17%. Now, one of the reasons why, other than the let's say structural softness of the industry more broadly, is, well, you know, the competition, not just among the smaller payment processors. This is a pretty small one, relatively speaking, only $73 billion market cap. But because of really what's going on with stablecoins. Now, to that end, right, Fiserv did launch FiUSD in the past couple months, developing a partnership with PayPal, hoping to step in to that space. But it's still down 42%-ish over the past 6 months. It's underperforming the industry by about 6.4%, the broader S&P. It is underperforming dramatically. And that's in spite of profit margins being somewhat resilient here. Their net margin elevated. Now, they hit a local peak in 2023, about 16%, projected to be 26.9% this upcoming year. Growth, though, albeit a 15% on an annualized basis going back 5 years, slowing dramatically, barely any growth, revenue growth at all from 2024 to 2025, only projected to be about $300 million in growth on a $20 billion figure from last year. And so because of that, right, you're seeing forward-looking price earnings tilt towards that downside, towards the low end of that spectrum over the past 5 years. Price to book also sitting at about its average, price to sales near that low as well. And so the question is, can they execute on one of the big initiatives, which is that stablecoin partnership with PayPal? Will they be able to execute moving forward? Does this deep pullback give long-term investors a good price to enter? You know, for me, unfortunately, you know, this is a company that has a bit of debt, not a crazy amount of debt for its $73 billion market cap, but still nearly $30 billion in debt. Its cash flow looks better. It's buying back shares. Either way, right, we're still seeing growth slow in a market that is incredibly competitive. And when you're talking about investing within the fintech payment processing space, it is a space that is dominated by players that have been there for decades and will not give up market share lightly. And so until I see some sort of turnaround in growth, right? Earnings were okay, not particularly stellar. They did just recently report earnings. They will report again in October. I don't know. I don't see any catalyst towards the upside after, well, 3, 4, 6 months of a consistent downward trend, breaking below previous support, trying to find some here. That is Fiserv, ticker FI. Thanks for the call. Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. Here's a little bit of what I have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic. Strategic interdependence is rewriting the global economy. The U.S.-China economic relationship has fundamentally shifted from focusing solely on cost and efficiency to prioritizing geopolitics, security, and supply chain resilience. Also touch on a new hypothesis about why tariffs haven't dramatically boosted inflation as was predicted, and that story I didn't quite get to on Wednesday about America's housing market and how that is falling, especially in cities that saw a boom. And should we have time at the end of the show, a quick preview of what may come in September with the U.S. corporate bond market. As always, we will also be answering your voice bank questions, including one on DoorDash, ticker DASH, another on Berry Corp, ticker BRY. And as always, your finance and investment questions that you decided to submit over on the InvestDoc YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls throughout the show. We're headed into our first break. It is a quick one, and when we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity and dive right in to the rest of this program. You're listening to Invest Talk. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Granger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART.
You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So, while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Before we move any further into those interesting stories and answering more of your questions, let's talk a little bit about the market today. And in a week, slightly positive in spite of being mostly lower on the day, the Dow was up 8 basis points, S&P 500 down 29 basis points, NASDAQ down 40, Russell 2000 down 55. And that downside in the S&P and NASDAQ, pretty limited, still posting, like I said, solid weekly gains. Russell 2000 capped off its best week since June, and in a year where breadth has been an issue, certainly something that investors like to see. Underperformers on the day included semis on some weak earnings, credit card names, investment banks, networking, IT, and equipment. Big tech, pretty mixed overall, and the best performers, managed care, United Healthcare, on the wake of news that Buffett's Berkshire took a position, had a good day today, pharma names, biotech, department stores, airlines, and chemicals. On the bond side, Treasury's a bit weaker. We did see some curve steepening. Yields on the long end up 4 to 5 basis points, and the 30-year back above the 4.9% level. Dollar index, however, down 40 basis points. Gold down 80 basis points. Crude oil down as well, down 1.8%. Overall, very uneventful session. The market didn't really do much, despite a hotter retail sales report and one-year inflation expectations coming a bit above where was expected, as well as some repricing towards a slightly flatter Fed rate cut path. The president said this morning he'll be setting tariffs on steel and chip imports next week, so certainly more news of that could drive markets looking ahead to next week. On the bullish side, though, strong Q2 earnings session metrics, favorable earnings revision trends, pretty still elevated corporate margins overall, some mitigation measures on the tariff side, and a strong retail impulse as well as continued corporate buybacks, really floating the market towards the higher levels that we've seen over the past couple months. On the macro side, headline July retail sales, 50 basis points month over month, in line with the consensus. June revised up 30 basis points to 0.9%. August Michigan consumer sentiment fell to 58.6, a bit weaker than the consensus of 62 and the lowest levels since May's post-Liberation Day print. And on the inflation side, those expectations up 40 basis points to 4.9% on the 1 year, while 5 and 10-year expectations up 50 basis points to 3.9%, certainly not something that bolsters the case for a quick cutting path for the Fed. A lot of other numbers. July industrial production posted a surprise contraction. And overall, early economist Reed noted that suggests foreign exporters not eating tariffs, particularly given the reading calculated before tariffs have been applied. So more evidence tariff effects coming into play there. On the Fed side, not much. Chicago's Goolsbee said the Fed doesn't need to hold rates forever, though still needs another month of inflation data to see if the economy is still on that golden path, if you will. And looking ahead to next week, Friday will bring a speech from the Fed chair himself, Jerome Powell. Market hoping to see a bit of a dovish turn as we await potential cuts in September. All righty, let's take a look at our first question of the day from the InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank. And this one is a three-parter. It says, I have questions on two different businesses. Okay, two-parter. Two different businesses. One is GRMN, since they had outstanding earnings last week. The second one is Bros, Dutch Bros, as they are growing and expanding from what I see. If I'm allowed a third, though we tend to only look at one, I would love to know your thoughts on ONON as well, as they are growing and the potential is high. Let's take a look at the first. You gave me three. We're going to look at two. First one is Garmin Limited. It's a provider of GPS-enabled hardware and software across fitness, outdoor, automotive, aviation, and marines. Best known for those wearable tech products, your Garmin watches. People love to wear them on runs. Very accurate. They have golf products as well. Another is Dutch Bros, ticker BROS. It's a high-growth U.S. operator and franchisor of drive-through beverages. It's founded in the 90s. Recently, they earned a spot on Business Daily's breakout stocks with a 55.8% average earnings growth. Quick story on Dutch Bros for you, actually. You know, I was in the middle of nowhere in California, And I saw this huge line, longer than any In-N-Out line. And if all any of you guys have been to an In-N-Out, you know what I'm talking about. Line stretches crazy, crazy, crazy. And I was thinking to myself, what is this? Lo and behold, it was a coffee joint that was that busy at 4 p.m. So certainly the growth, I can see it anecdotally firsthand. These are two very different names, right? One is a more mature GPS tech fitness company. The other, Dutch Bros, a drive-through coffee chain. One is, like I said, a mature presence in multiple sectors. The other is still quickly growing. So let's look at Dutch Bros first. Dutch Bros having, like I said, phenomenal growth, 40% sales growth year over year. And growth really didn't slow much. Supposed to be $1.6 billion from $1.3 billion this previous year. Margins, they were negative in the pandemic, but positive 9.4% EBIT margin, 6.3% net margin here. One issue though, crazy expensive. Great growth, but worth 78 times forward-looking earnings, 29.4 times price to cash flow. I don't know about that. It's up 94.89% over the past 52 weeks. A little bit too expensive for a coffee company in my book. Let's take a quick look at Garmin, see if this is at a more reasonable valuation here. Again, Garmin, a mature company, up 36% in the past 52 weeks. Trading at 27.7 times forward-looking earnings, 34 times cash flow, 5.6 times price to book value. Also solid growth for a mature company, 10% on an annualized basis. Grew more than 10% or projected to grow more than 10% this year. About $700 million on $6.2 billion in revenue. My math tells me more than 10%. And at the same time, margins, 22.4% net margin. Return on equity, 18.2%. Looks a lot more solid in my opinion. It also pays a decent dividend, 1.5%. Consensus tells you it's a little expensive here, though. And given the recent run-up, I think that makes a little bit of sense. It's strong. From a relative perspective, it is strong compared to the overall market. Been on quite a tear over the past 5-6 months. I'm more likely to keep this on my watch list because it looks like it's more ripe for a pullback that can give you a good entry at a price far more reasonable than what we're seeing with Dutch Bros. By the way, people tend to pull back on to-go coffee in times of economic stress. Thanks for the call. Sorry we couldn't get to all three. Or rather, thanks for watching. Moving into breaks, still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions. Why don't you give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about an overarching theme that has driven market economic activity this year and is likely to continue to do so in the future. And that is about a shift towards strategic interdependence as the global economy is being rewired. Now, analysts at Goldman Sachs took a look at this and came away with some key insights. And it all stacks upon the idea that the U.S.-China trade tensions, having eased recently, has still fundamentally shifted away from full coupling and more towards security, resilience, and geopolitical considerations. Globalization persists, right? Cost efficiency is still an important part of it, but cost efficiency alone no longer is driving trade. National security, cyber risk, supply chain flexibility, especially in the wake of the pandemic, now have influence on decision-making from not just governments, but from firms as well. U.S. investment in China is more selective. It is not stopping, right? Originally, when we saw the crazy tariff numbers, over 100% tariff numbers, the worry was, okay, well, you're trying to decouple economies very quickly. And what effect is that going to have on people around the world? But as we've seen over the past couple months, now investment is just now more selective, right? It's moved a bit away towards strategic interdependence rather than full decoupling. Firms are prioritizing supply chain resilience rather than cost efficiency. They're accepting a bit of higher expenses for this diversification. They're accepting holding deeper inventories on their books for this supply chain diversification. They're okay with less efficiency to ensure what we would call supply security. Interestingly enough, China's share of imports, of U.S. imports, fell from 22% to 13.4% from 2017 to 2024. But what about our more closely tied allies? Vietnam, their share doubled. Mexico became the top U.S. trading partner in that time. And so what you're seeing overall is this trend that as investors, we should pay attention to. You're seeing overall supply chains are diversifying. They're moving more towards multi-node networks, often involving Chinese partners, but not solely reliant on them. They are taking Chinese goods and moving them into new markets to reduce this disruption risk. They're taking goods from one country and putting them in factories in another to deal with potential disruption risk. And so because of that, you're seeing firms in China a little bit, some ways, suffer, right? FDI into China is down over 90% in 4 years, hitting a 30-year low, especially in sensitive tech sectors, these foreign direct imports, as firms adopt the China for China strategies. At the same time, Chinese outbound investments in the United States, down, I'll let you guess the number, 95% since 2016. A lot of that capital is not just staying in China. It's being redirected towards Africa, Southeast Asia, the Middle East, Latin America. A country that, China, is trying to invest dramatically in other nations to gain influence. And so for companies that have historically said, this is our supply chain, this is our area, we're going to take on the risk of being in this country, well, now you're navigating even more complex risks, regulatory uncertainty, data localization, national security reviews, in some cases, capital controls. And so as we look towards the types of manufacturing firms, industrial firms, tech firms that we even as investors want to invest in, it's important to note that success in this era of interdependence depends on more granular market views, more versatility, and more strategic long-term adaptation. All right, let's see if we can tackle another caller question from our YouTube comment section. It says, is it a good time to buy some stocks? Question says, I've been keeping an eye on what's going on in the markets lately, and it feels like we've got a few cross currents to watch. The latest CPI numbers show headline inflation cooling, which makes a Fed rate cut more likely, but core inflation is still hanging around, so the Fed might not get too dovish just yet. I guess my question is that since we see some sort of stability now compared to last 3 months, is it a good time to buy some stocks, or what industries would you suggest? Well, I wouldn't agree with the contention that inflation is cooling, right? When you look at a pure CPI number, you have a lot of lagged effects here. One big part of it is the 12-month look back into real estate, rentals, housing. And so as you move towards what was a historically expensive time and the housing market is starting to break a little bit, as the months in the past drop off and these cheaper months come in, it understandably, from a calculation perspective, eases that top end number. That's part of the divergence between when you actually get deep look-ins in a more granular way and you see certain areas where inflation is picking back up. And so I wouldn't agree with the idea that, well, now inflation is cooling, therefore the Fed rate path is certain. Now the market seems to think in September it is certain, but beyond that, who really knows? As inflation is not fully gone, right? We do see it in producers' prices and all sorts of figures besides CPI. We're also now worried a little bit about a labor market. But here's what I would say. Is now a good time to buy stocks? If your investment horizon is long enough, you're not going to really think about if you entered that stock here or if you entered it 5 years, 5% lower 20 years from now. And so if you're young, if you don't need the money, if you have a long time horizon, it's always a good time to buy stocks. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we're ready to take more of your questions. Answer more of your questions, but you got to give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, we'll look into this topic: why investors who trade more often tend to make less. Warren Buffett has warned that frequent trading often leads to lower returns, and instead he advocates for the patient, long-term approach of holding quality companies. That's Monday, but right now we're ready to take a live call from Sammy from San Francisco, listening on AM 1220. How can we help you, Sammy?
Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoy your show, always. The question I have is for the Adobe company. I hold some stock I purchased several years ago. It went up, a decent amount, but then it's been, pretty stagnant recently. And with the AI and everything, what do you think? Should I dump this stock and just move on to a different company, or hold on? Maybe there's maybe some more gains to be had there. What's your view?
Yeah, so for those of you who do not know, Adobe is a software company, global technology company, primarily for digital marketing and media solutions. Now, this company, high profile-wise, did pass on an acquisition of a company, Figma, that recently went public to a massive multi-billion dollar valuation. And the thinking was, okay, if this IPO does well, maybe Adobe's stock will respond positively as well, right? If valuations are higher, maybe they'll do well. So for the past 5 years, it's up about, or over the past 5 days, that is, it's up about 3.78%. But still, over the past 3 months, it's down 12.32%, down 20.2% year to date. One of the reasons why is, in spite of, pretty strong fundamentals, they did beat expectations on adjusted EPS and raise full year guidance. Most investors are pretty cautious because on twofold, right? One is their AI monetization hasn't been going as well as they had hoped. The timeline is pushed out pretty far, as all of these companies are competing to monetize AI within their systems, and also competitive pressures. If you think about what Adobe is, photo editing, photo creation, marketing, these are things that are easily eaten away in general by these large language models. And so you've seen downgrades over the past 3 months from various ratings agencies really focusing on the AI-related risks. But there's also been a pretty broad-based decline over the past 6 months. Investor sentiment, industry sentiment has kind of diverged. And this has been an area of the market that's been left behind, as a lot of other tech companies have been dragged up within the AI secular growth theme. Now, there are positives, right? Profitability is still pretty solid for this name. And in fact, increasing up from 25.8% net margin to 37.5%. So it's projected to be this year. Growth hasn't completely dried up. Their average over the past 5 years is about 14.1%. This year, it's roughly about 10%. Just under 10% is what they're projected to grow in terms of revenue this year. But all this has led to a forward-looking price to earnings sitting at about their five-year low. Price to book still within there, or near their average there. Price to cash flow as well, near that five-year low. But cash flow is improving. They're buying back shares. This is a difficult one, right? Because what we do know is that companies that underperform tend to continue to underperform. And looking from a technical perspective, this is a clear downtrend that has not been broken. I think that investors who are moving towards the AI theme want companies that are projecting monetization closer. And so although I do think that Adobe may have a long-term benefit here with some strategic acquisitions, and like I said, some of that monetization effort that they've been doing, I just don't really see a near-term catalyst that can propel this significantly higher in a sustainable way. And so I don't see any problem if you wanted to move on here. Certainly, if you see a little bit of a pump from here, a little bit of a rally from here, which it may be on at the moment, back up above 350 for the first time in a couple weeks, it might be a good time to start to trim and start to look elsewhere. That is Adobe, ticker ADBE. Alrighty, it is Friday, so I want to briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which we will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insights section, we mentioned an update on the current market conditions. In the portfolio management section, we touch on the differences between a trust and a will. And in the stocks section, we mentioned two companies, one a South Korean telecom operator, and the other a company that provides funeral and cemetery services. If this sounds interesting to you, if you're interested in any of this at all whatsoever, you can head over to investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday afternoons. All right, let's talk a little bit about something we haven't discussed ever, and that's tariffs. And economists expected, I would say, very high effects very quickly from tariffs and that they would fuel inflation. But the impact has been smaller, certainly smaller than feared, partly because the effective tariff rates are far lower than those headline figures made people believe they would be. Barclays research found that the weighted average tariff rate in May was 9%, below the 12% based on the White House announcement, due to duty-free goods and reduced imports from high tariff countries like China. About 52% of U.S. imports in June were tariff-free. 52% were tariff-free, with exemptions for pharmaceuticals, for certain electronics, for semiconductors, and many goods from two of our largest trading partners to the north and south, Canada and Mexico. And that's because importers have been shifting sourcing. We talked about that a little bit in our main focus point about risks, geopolitical risks, regulatory risks. And so with an announcement of what tariffs are going to be, importers shifted sourcing to already existing sources in those lower tariff countries or domestic producers, further reducing the average rates actually paid. If you recall, there was a headline story about Apple making iPhones in India, but that was kind of misleading because Apple was already making iPhones in India. And what the story was really getting at is that they would just use that supply as their U.S. iPhones. And so not much is being shifted in terms of opening of factories. They're kind of just moving around to where things would be cheaper to import. Now, from January to June, tariff revenue totaled $58.5 billion. While overall inflation, it was far below worst-case forecasts, though imported goods, some imported goods like furniture, did see prices increase. Many companies, though, one of the reasons why prices haven't gone up as much, many companies front-loaded imports. The massive surge in imports in Q1 in March ahead of these tariff announcements led to reduced imports later. Now, that doesn't mean that this is where the effective tariff rates are going to stay, right? Inventories will deplete, new tariffs may be put in place. And so Barclays projects that the effective tariff rate will move closer to 15%. As these exemptions close, as new levels are implemented, 100% on semiconductors, possibly 250% on pharmaceuticals. And there are other estimates that are higher. The Budget Yale Lab, current effective rate is at 18.6%, still down from May's 21.9%. But here's the thing, right? Firms are increasingly preparing to pass tariffs on to consumers after delaying price hikes while these rates remained uncertain. And because of that, price pressures could build in the coming months as inventory buffers shrink, as exemptions expire, and as companies start to implement price increases that will affect many products from our daily lives. All righty, let's drop a fresh caller question now.
Hey, gentlemen, this is Jeff in East Tennessee. I'm looking at Berry Corporation, BRY. Looks like it's pretty affordable right now. Wanted to get your thoughts on it. Thank you.
Let's pull up BRY, which is Berry Corporation. It's a small cap name. Looks to be a upstream energy company, so they focus on onshore and long-lived oil and gas reserves in both California and Utah. About 83% of its revenue comes from its exploration and production. About 16.6% comes from the well servicing. It's been on, I don't know what the opposite of a tear is, but whatever that is, that's its performance year to date, down 31.23%, underperforming its industry drastically. All the way going back to 2022, with a 58.8% underperformance in 2022. Then 9%, then 37.2%, then 24.4%. It has not had a positive year since 2022, where it had a 14. Oh, I'm sorry. It actually hasn't had a positive year since 2021, when it had a dramatic price increase. Now, taking a look at revenue, as you'd expect with this much of price this much of a loss in price over the past 4 years. They had top revenue in 2022, $1 billion in revenue. That's steadily fallen to $863, then a little bit up to $917 million, projected to be about $677 million this year, and they're losing money. So with this, price to book sits at about 0.3, the low of its 5 years. And earnings have, not looked too great either. Overall, I think this is a situation where, yes, the company's not doing particularly well because of the underlying commodity. But I think there are better opportunities out there that aren't starting to head towards $1 a share, who actually have revenue growth and whose margins aren't set to be negative this year. That is Berry Corporation, very small company, $240 million market cap, nearing microcap territory. Ticker BRY, gonna have to pass. Another thing we like to do on Fridays is a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. The 2-year treasury yield was at 3.757% today. Last week, that number was 3.76. 189 weeks ago, which is about 3.5 years, that number was 0.64%. The 10-year yield was at 4.326% today. Last week, that number was a bit lower at 4.287. 53 weeks back, that number was at 3.921. And 3.5 years ago, that number was 1.762. Gold was priced at $33.36 per ounce. That is a $58 decrease compared with last week. 2 weeks back, that number is very inaccurate because 2 weeks back it was not 1935, but 181 weeks ago that number was 1806. Silver today was priced at $37.99 per ounce. That is a decrease of 34 cents compared with last week. 79 weeks ago that number was 2280. And looking back 173 weeks, silver was $23.94. Oil was selling for $62.93 per barrel today. That is an 80 cent decrease compared with last week. 47 weeks ago, that number was $67.79. 89 weeks back, that number was $74.30. And 189 weeks ago, that number was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.15 per gallon, same as the last 2 weeks. 115 weeks ago, it was $3.56. And 163 weeks back, the number was $4.25. If we go all the way back 3.5 years, a gallon of regular gas cost $3.57. California gas was averaging $4.49 per gallon, same number as last week. 93 weeks ago, that number was $5.32. And 169 weeks back, that was $5.87. For comparison, in Minnesota, where my best friend is right now, enjoying the Mall of America, gas is averaging $2.95 per gallon today. That is $1.54 less than gas in California. Alrighty, I think we can fit in another caller question, so let's tackle it now.
Hi, my name is Thomas. I'm calling from Santa Cruz, California. I've been listening to the show for the last 3 or 4 years and really love what you guys do on the show. I'm calling asking about eBay. What is a good price to be openly investing into eBay moving forward? Tell me what you think. I'll be listening.
Alrighty, eBay is a e-commerce company made famous in the early 2000s when it started this online auction system. Now they do a whole lot more than that, but this online marketplace is still the bulk of their revenue. About 84% of the revenue comes from their online marketplace. About 18% comes from advertising. The company has done really well over the past year, up 80.37%. up 62.55% year to date, and relative strength has been pretty solid going back to mid-2022. Now, sales growth, bit slow, but still growing, and at the same time, margins fantastic. In the high teens to mid-20s, projected to be 23.4% this upcoming year. Forward-looking priced earnings, too, it's only sitting about 17 in spite of this massive run-up over the past 52 weeks. Price to cash flow, 21.7. Price to book, a bit expensive, sitting at about 9.5. Now, the surge was on the back of an earnings beat. They delivered a strong Q2 performance. Adjusted EPS of 137 beat the estimates of 130. From a percentage basis, that's a pretty significant beat. They beat on revenue as well. Revenue up 6% year over year. And so you had this continued technical breakout here and strong momentum, up another 2.25% today on the back of that makes it 42.63% in the past 3 months. It is the top performer or one of the top performers in retail in a space that is increasingly moving towards e-commerce. We've actually been looking at this name and we discussed it the other day in the office. And I think thematically it fits with one of the drivers overall of the retail space. And the improved Q2 and Q3 guidance is certainly something that investors should like as well. So for me, I think, you know, it's had quite a bit of run over the past 3 months. It is ripe for a bit of a technical pullback, especially because the next earnings upgrade, or rather the next earnings update, is not set for October. You have a lot of time where there shouldn't be a lot of catalyst moving things. Perhaps you have a slowdown in retail sales. You have consumers pulling back a little bit. Could give you a ripe entry opportunity on eBay. That is eBay, ticker, you guessed it, EBAY. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART. And while we're on break, why don't you check out the Invest Talk store at investtalkstore.com.
'25 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
I wanted to reach out about a company called Cardinal Health, ticker symbol CAH. I bought it a while back. I'm up around 100% right now, and I was just wondering if you thought the company still looked good. I wanted your input on it. You think I should trim? You think I should sell? Or just let it ride? I'd love to hear your answer, and I'll look forward to it on the show. Thank you. Bye.
Cardinal Health is a healthcare services and products company. They have medical devices, pharmaceutical devices, over-the-counter healthcare and consumer products. And they also manufacture, source, and distribute their own branded medical, surgical, and laboratory technology. It is a fairly large company, though not crazy large, about $36 billion market cap, and has very little debt, about $9.3 billion in debt, pays a solid 1.36% dividend yield, and has bought shares back consistently over the past 5 years, while cash flow has moderated a bit, but still remained at a consistent level over the past 3 years. At the same time, profitability been pretty stagnant and pretty low. 10 basis points, 4 basis points, 10 basis points, 40 basis points, and 70 basis points is where it sat over the past 3 years. Forward-looking price to earnings sitting about 15.7, so seems to be in the middle of the range of where it's been over the past 3 years. You know, in spite of healthcare being beat up a bit over the past couple years, this name's done pretty well. Outperforming its industry by 6.2% this year, up 26.5% year-to-date. Up 38.64% over the past 52 weeks. It's really benefited from it being a low volatility name, an established name that has had a bit of earnings upgrades, analyst upgrades, and price target upgrades certainly drove it higher over the past 3 months. And again, continuing to have a consistent dividend with low volatility has made it a good name to invest in. That being said, you're up 100% on this name. I think it's always a good idea to start to take profits there, diversify into something that may be a bit undervalued. This seems to be about a fully valued name here. That is Cardinal Health, ticker CAH. All right, let's talk housing. Now, Atlanta, Austin, Miami, those were housing era or pandemic era boom towns where you saw major gains with ultra low mortgage rates in the wake of and just after the pandemic, but that's all starting to end. U.S. home prices have fallen in most cities in the past 3 months, with the West and the South hit the hardest and the North and the Midwest being a bit more resilient. High mortgage rates, 7%, are squeezing recent buyers, especially in Sunbelt cities, where values have already dropped a bit too dramatically. Internal migration to the Sunbelt has slowed, and stricter border policies may be reducing international arrivals. And another thing you're seeing is, well, when debt was cheap, decent amount of construction. Pandemic-era construction is now hitting the market, adding supply just as demand weakens. And that hurts those cities. It hurts the Austins. It hurts the Miamis that have lost their tech boom allure. Northeast holiday towns are also struggling. You're seeing price declines in Martha's Vineyard and coastal Maine and Nantucket. And Florida is the weakest market out of all of them, with prices down 4% year over year due to high insurance cost, fewer Canadian buyers, and coastal costly post-surfside safety rules. That's the thing about housing, right? It is highly sensitive to interest rates, making it a key economic indicator as tight Fed policy slows consumption, slows investment, and slows job growth. And with what we've been talking about, with where we've seen inflation, with the strength of the labor market, it's possible that at least until next May, when there's a new Fed chair and potentially beyond, that Fed rate cuts may be limited. Tariff risks fueling inflation and AI-driven capital spending is already supporting economic growth in a way that the Fed doesn't really need to step in. And so this is all to say that after about a decade that has dramatically favored homeowners, the shift may finally be on, giving those aspiring home buyers, at a time when renting is historically cheap relative to buying, a better opening, though unfortunately, affordability challenges will still remain. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you and they can get at iTunes, Spotify, or if you feel like watching, well, you can look on YouTube at our YouTube channel, search InvestTalk with two T's. As always, if today's show made you think about your own financial situation, your taxes, your retirement, your investments, if you're saving enough for your kids and you just want another head to check it all out for you, head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Justin and I talk to listeners just like you each and every day. And honestly, it's my favorite part of the job. So set a meeting. Would love to chat. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.